Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Chilluminati Podcast, episode 262. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Mike Martin, joined by the King Kong and Anne of L.A.
Anne,
that's like the lady he kidnaps.
Yeah, like the... Oh. You know what? I'm glad I learned the lady's name for the first time ever.
Oh, wow. There you go. All for you.
Mike, what if you're the Anne and I'm the Jack Black character?
You're like, "'Twas beauty killed the beast. "'Twas Kyle Gass."
Run around and just be scared.
Yeah. Can I do that?
That's fine. And that means Alex is King Kong.
Yeah. "'Twas beauty killed Tenacious D."
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I'll take it. Welcome back to the show, everybody. I know usually Alex jumps in to shill the Patreon, but I actually want to jump up to the very top and just actually shill myself for the Patreon, because for some people, they are of the $5 tier, which means they get ad-free episodes and a few other benefits. But starting this past week and from now on, every Wednesday, going to the public will be one or two minisodes.
Yeah, this is good.
If you are one of the $5 tier who doesn't get access to the minisodes, all of those minisodes that we are going to be releasing will be released onto Patreon ad free as well. So that'll be part of that tier. Went live already. And every week from now on, you're going to get two minisodes on a Wednesday until we're about 3 months behind where Patreon's at. And then I'll just release one every Wednesday, just one, just alongside with the one that goes live.
And I might be saying, why? Turns out we have 8,000 minisode episodes that are just sitting there.
There's just too
we are over a year and some months ahead.
The value was so great that we figured that our regular listeners decided to, like, they just deserve more bang for their buck now. How about that?
Yep.
Also,
Here's
another thing that I want to say. I got a haircut. Okay.
Okay. Congratulations, Alex. Thank you, Patreon, for allowing Alex.
What do you guys think? Look, hold on. I'm gonna take my headphones off for a second.
You have the grainiest screen I've ever seen.
I know you're very grainy.
What do you guys think of it? You look great,
but I wonder what everybody on Patreon.com thinks of it.
That's what I'm saying. If you want to see my haircut, sign up at Patreon.com. What tier is it?
That's the profit tier.
The profit tier. If you want to know, if you want to look ahead and know how my haircut looks, head to patreon.com/chilluminatipod, and you now can get video on every episode that we put out every single time. FMV, full motion video.
I don't want them to see how tired I look today.
You look great.
You look great.
I am feeling
pizza.
You know, the lighting, something happened with the lighting in this office. And so now, like, look, when I smile, the shadows make it look like even more pronounced.
It's really like, dink, dink. Yeah, I guess it's nice. It's defined. Yeah,
I just look like I'm always looking at porn.
Well, that's a way, you know.
Look at that.
Certainly.
You see that?
One of us is.
Look at all these visual bits. You can't believe these visual bits. They're so funny. Patreon.com/Chilluminati Pod, where you can now watch us as I drink my Spindrift.
Yep. The profiteer gets video main episodes, video mini episodes, video Q&As when those come out. You also get Rotten Popcorn, which has like 6 or 7 extra episodes on Patreon that hasn't been released. Access to the full fucking like year and a half's worth of minisodes.
More X-Files coming soon, by the way.
That's the next one, I think, is actually the next gen is X-Files. So we'll be doing a few more episodes of that in the next Rotten Popcorn. Just go check it out. It's some good stuff. All right, boys. It's time to go back to the world of aliens. Are you ready for Gulf Breeze Part 2?
I want to say something about Gulf Breeze real quick. Obviously, we're just joking mostly, but like, I went on Reddit worried that I was going to like see the like triggered like Gulf Breeze resident post that was going to be like, "Fuck you guys. Gulf Breeze is so beautiful. We love it." There were people from Gulf Breeze area on the subreddit and they were like, "You guys were right."
Yeah. It was great. That's amazing. That's, I was like, yes.
Now, Gulf Breeze, I'm going to visit you. I'm coming. For that, I'm coming. Gulf Breeze is a town after my own heart. My hometown of San Pedro, California is an unfriendly and, while beautiful, quite miserable place. And I love that about it because it keeps people out.
It keeps people away.
Civilization is ever encroaching. The Raising Canes will overtake us all someday. but until that day, you know, the unfriendly, slightly miserable, comfortable, beautiful, ugly, shitty, wonderful towns of America got to hang tough. You know what I'm saying? Shout out to Gulf Breeze.
As you said last time, the cultureless towns of America.
Yeah. Those towns that just are like that fast food place that you read about that like put sauce on something recently. That's the town. Like anybody who's got sauced up whatever's at their restaurant right now, that's what the people of Gulf Breeze are eating for lunch.
The Wendy's of America, if
the
you
Deadpool
will.
And Damn. Wolverine chimichanga churro chicken tender box, sauced up and loaded to go box or whatever the fuck.
That sounds great. Honestly, it sounds kind of fucking delicious.
I know.
We got to get into Gulf Breeze part two. So last episode, Gulf Breeze, we talked about Ed Walters and about six or so of his, what I would consider the main sightings that would indicate why his life may have fallen apart. Yes.
But he had taken many more photos, to be clear.
Right. So the reason this is two parts is because while those are like what I would consider the more realistic sightings out of all of them, the man had over 20 of them and they all got fucking crazy.
Now, 20 sightings or 20 pictures?
No, 20 sightings, over 20 pictures, of which it is impossible to fucking find every single picture this man took. I've looked so fucking hard.
We're about to Pepe Sylvia this, aren't we?
Yeah. So there's a reason that this sighting is debated quite heavily among UFO enthusiasts and skeptics alike, both on the believer and the skeptic side, though I would say the skeptic side has a better argument than the believer side.
You mean the ones with evidence and like reasons for believing what they believe?
We'll get to it at the end, but evidence ended up getting planted as well, like provably so. Yes, like because they were desperate to prove that he was lying, and the problem is they should have just kind of taken the stories as evidence enough that he was probably lying about this stuff.
I joked last week about it being like those paleontologists trying to screw each other over, but it is actually going there, isn't it? We're about to get.
You might wonder why he'd try to get someone to try to plant evidence. Well, it all boils down to politics in the end, and we'll talk about that at the end here. Yeah,
politics.
Absolutely. Politics.
I thought for sure you were going to say
politics.
Local politics at Gulf Breeze, Florida.
I know. Wild, right? Wild.
Big chicken coming in, trying to level some land to make way for drive-through chicken tender joints.
Yeah, exactly. So this episode, I'm not going to go through all of the fucking sightings. Go read the book if you really want to read about all of them. They're all in there. But a good handful of them that really kind of show you why people don't fully believe him, along with some evidence that was presented back then and some evidence that I stumbled across last week and Jesse also independently stumbled across between last week and this episode.
I can't wait to talk about it.
It's great. That'll be towards the end.
You guys stumbled on something. When you bring this up again, I'm going to try and remember to like tell you guys a little bit of Alex internet philosophy. So that's okay. That's what you have to look forward to. A golden nugget of pure thought.
So between those encounters where Ed was seeing the UFO closer, getting hit with that blue beam, and then as they tapered off to more like sightings, and the one that seemed kind of weird was the one that zipped around in the sky. In between all of those, there were a lot more, and they got more and more and more and more and more intense, weird, and personal. And it's hard to figure out if Ed was doing this because, like we spoke about last week, where he did have something that shook him to his core. Nobody fucking believed him. So he just doubled down, and figured out how to create some photos that looked like UFOs, even if they weren't there. Or if he saw a moment in the spotlight, even though it caused his wife to divorce him a few years later and whatnot, did he get caught up in the entire thing?
I'm firmly in that camp. I've never been more in a camp of that in my life.
It feels like Fargo, but like instead of like guys coming after you with wood chipper or whatever the hell happens at the end of Fargo. I'm just kidding. I know what happens at the end of Fargo, but like it's like aliens instead of that. Like it's like the drug is aliens. Like he went past he fell to the dark side, and the dark side is aliens, alien hoaxes.
And we'll discuss all of that. Absolutely. And I think I'm with Jesse. I think I more err on the side of the man might have accidentally put himself in the spotlight and didn't just was like, I'm going with it. It's too late. I'm fucking going with it.
It happens all the time.
So hold on. You guys both think he saw something that he couldn't explain?
I don't think Jesse believed that. I still think he may have actually seen something that fucked him up. And then
I never think he saw something for real. I think he like saw an opportunity, took it, and it went like too far. And the reason why I know this, the reason why I firmly believe this, this is some Jesse, this is some deep Jesse lore. When I was in high school, I really wanted to get a cookie for lunch, right? I only had enough lunch money for the basic lunch, but I wanted one of those like cookies, the fudge rounds, 25 cents.
Yeah.
Right? 25 cents. So I got a paper cup and stood out in front of the lunch line and said, hey, collecting money on behalf of student council. And in 3 minutes, I had $35.
Scam artist. Wow.
And I,
in that moment,
at that point, I should have backed out after 25 cents.
No,
I should have just gone to a friend and asked for 25 cents. But I was embarrassed because I didn't want to ask a friend for money because I was not a rich kid in school, but I went to a very well-to-do school. My parents busted their ass to get me in that school. And so I just was like trying to do a thing because I could get 25 cents. And that with $35, the point of teacher, the reason I had 35, the teacher gave me 20. And then he noticed and was like, come with me. So I was in the principal's, they were calling my parents. I was in deep trouble. And I was like, it got out of control. I didn't want that to happen. All I wanted was to get a fudge round, dude. So I'm saying,
that's such a good analogy for like what I think happens with Ed Walters. Whether he saw something real or not, I think that mentality was, oh shit, it all happened so fast.
Well, because it really changes it. Like your version of the story is that like, he was twisted so deeply by something that scared the shit out of him that he resorted to violating the trust of the people around him. Where Jesse's like, like we just had
to go to every student who gave me money and give them money back so that I didn't get my ass booted out of school. I had to shame walk, and it was deserved. It was super.
Absolutely.
Also, probably again. Reason why karmically I became a teacher. I like had to, so I like had to
write that wrong.
You had to.
Yeah.
I had to.
The universe was like, you got to do it, dude.
Sorry, you got it. But let me twist that scenario just gently to maybe put it in the perspective that like he saw something. What if you were part of the student council and they said, we need you to raise $20 for during lunch for us to go towards dance. And then you made like 50.
Would the student council would have been like, you're president now. Like that's a different vibe. Like, cause you're still raising money for the council. All right, I wanted to do was get 25 cents for a fudge round, by the way, they were 25 cents in the '90s, y'all. It was crazy.
Yeah,
all I wanted was 25 cents for a fudge round. And it just got out of hand. Just when I stuck out the cup, money started coming in.
Yeah.
And literally it was minutes. And I like didn't know what to do. Like, well, if I can get out of here, but then I felt bad. And then a teacher was like, no. And I got what I deserved. And I think the thing here is that all of this stuff associated with this was an attempt to prevent the getting what you deserve ending, which right. is yes, like, I think he just lied. And then he was, it would be embarrassing. Cause like Alex was saying, it's a small ass town.
Yep.
Everyone kind of knows each other. He's important. Cause he helped build the damn thing. And that's a shame thing.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
you know, sometimes you need a little shame. Sometimes you need to be shamed a little and to like write yourself, because otherwise you're going to turn into a guy who spends his entire life talking about aliens and you lose your family.
Yeah. And isn't it weird how long the aliens were on that roof before the Secret Service did anything?
Oh, wait, what are we talking about? Huh? What?
Huh? Same thing? What? No, and I agree with you. Now, imagine how hard it is to admit to that shame when you have a couple of hype men around you all the time that are like, no, you're right. And that's what we're going to get to. So we're going to go back to 1987, because this all took place over the course of about three or four months, and it's going to be in December, to what is considered his sixth encounter, I believe. And this is the one where I'm like, okay, things are getting a little weird. And in his book, to be fair, if you read the book, every single encounter he gives two perspectives, his and then his wife's, and what his wife saw during this. And some
is
of the things
his wife's words, or is it just like
in his wife's words, spoken as though she is the one writing the book? It is in first person and refers to Ed in third. While when he's speaking about it, he's speaking in first, okay, referring to his wife in third.
But is it his wife?
His wife's name is on the cover of the book as one of the authors. So okay, I imagine yes.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So we're going to start with this encounter where one night he goes to bed, and right before bed, he's like talking to his wife. And I guess every night they've had this routine of counting the number of days where they haven't been bothered by the UFOs. And then this particular night, he remembers writing in the book that it was the 12th night, 12 nights since something has bothered them, though he hasn't slept super well regardless.
This is a cute little, little
anecdote. Yeah.
It's like a way of doing some exposition while also kind of like coloring the relationship between the two characters. It's nice.
Getting into credit card debt is so easy. Getting out, well, the system's set up so we don't. If you're struggling with credit cards, personal loans, collections, or medical bills, you need to check out PDS Debt. PDS Debt provides a service to match you with debt solutions tailored to your financial situation. If you're making payments every month on your debt and your balances aren't going down, PDS Debt has solutions for you. Everyone with $10,000 or more in eligible debt qualifies, and there is no minimum credit score required. Bad and fair credit score accepted. Save more while paying off your debt in a fraction of the time. PDS Debt strives to understand your specific scenario and can help provide alternative solutions to becoming debt-free. I personally used to have a pretty bad credit score, and I think it's really good that PDS Debt actually has no minimum credit score required, and they accept bad and fair credit, and I wish more places did that. So stop waiting and start saving. Get a free debt analysis right now at pdsdebt.com/chill. It only takes 30 seconds. That's pdsdebt.com/chill. pdsdebt.com/chill. Chill.
And so as they went to bed, they were only asleep for about 2 hours, or at the very least, Ed was only asleep for about 2 hours, when suddenly, in his mind, in his head, he says, there was a bright white flash. His eyes, he says, were closed, but the sensation was complete whiteout, quote unquote, inside of his head. Like not from an external flash. It was happening in his brain. He says he shuddered and he managed to open his eyes, and standing at the side of his bed were three dark figures exposed only by the traces of light that were from streetlight filtering through his windows. And his vision was already really blurred at this point, so he was straining to see these things. He said that they were motionless and they looked directly into his eyes, and several other shadows moved towards the foot of the bed further away from him, putting it at the count somewhere like 5 or 6. He said he tried to yell, "Hey, what's going on here?" But his voice did not respond to his moving lips. And as he opened and closed his mouth, trying to yell, he couldn't. So he tried to start sitting up. The figures, he said, turned quickly toward and deliberately toward him. And as soon as he started moving, they left the room. They were just like, "Oh, gotta go. See you later." And he, like, left the bedroom for some reason.
Sure. He sounds a lot like sleep paralysis.
Doesn't it? Oh boy, doesn't it? So as he was continuing to struggle to sit up, he said he tried to make a grab for one of the figures, but missed. And suddenly the noise in his head, which he had remembered and reported in earlier ones as that humming noise that he heard off of the UFOs, was now like in his mind. And all of a sudden, a wave of dizziness swept over him and he fell face down onto the foot of the bed as he tried to like gain his balance. Now, Francis's, which is his wife, her recollection of this event is she remembers waking up to Ed like groaning and fighting his own blankets. Like she turned over to the bed and he's like, just like fighting his own blankets, squirming on the bed. But she didn't see any figures.
It's feeling a lot like just like textbook sleep paralysis.
But keep in mind, she's also in another encounter said to have seen the UFO as well. So the question is, is she like appeasing her husband because this is like, you know, he's kind of being weird, or is she actually seeing things? Or is she falling into his delusion? Because you have those moments where there's like that group mania, group delusion, where they think they're all kind of hallucinating. She just gets like
whipped up into the frenzy.
Yeah, whipped up into the frenzy, because his kids too at this point are in their teens, late teens. And the son in particular, when it comes to the aliens, is like eager to go fight them. Anytime his dad says he sees a UFO, he's like, he wants to go out there and just like encounter them and like,
do you think it's also them. Just being like a supportive family member?
Possible.
Like, even if they don't see them, they're like, "I'm here for you, dad."
The you're kids going for sure. Thing. Yeah, I think the kids for sure. The wife at the very least for a couple of years, but then she left and she was like, "I just can't do this anymore." Because his whole life just became UFOs. Yeah, she just, you know, she left.
So she was like kind of like not totally with him on whether it was real in the book. Is that the vibe?
In the book, she's with him that it's real, but the divorce came a couple years after the book came out.
Well, like in that one where she's like, didn't see the figures, right? She's like, "I don't know what he was doing that time. I didn't see no aliens. He was probably crazy." Or is it like,
she says she didn't see anything, but she errs on the side of him maybe having a psychic experience or what have you, with like them manipulating his mind and whatnot. So because she tried, he said he remembers Francis grabbing onto his left arm as he was trying to get up and she was saying something, but all he could hear was the roar, he said in his mind, of crashing water. He could not hear what his wife was saying to him in this moment. He said her grasp was determined, though, and her face seemed, when he looked over at her, distorted. And seeing her distorted face caused him to fall off the side of the bed. And as he struggled to stand, the noise in his head finally began to fade, and he could finally hear his wife's voice saying, "What is it, Ed? What's wrong?" So clearly, again, she didn't see what he was seeing. All she saw was her husband fighting the blankets in a desperate attempt for something.
Feels like an exact description of like when my buddy got sleep paralysis while we were camping.
Oh, like, yeah. Rosie. Just, okay. Yeah.
Because I was like, hey, you know, because they started like,
yeah. 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 Someone who's like waking up from sleep paralysis next to you, it's a little scary because like all they can really do is vocalize their whole body.
They
is just
can't really move the rest of their body because it's kind of like not really under their control. So they're kind of screaming, kind of moving. It's really upsetting to, if you didn't know what that was, if you didn't know that that existed, that would be a very scary thing to witness.
I would say. I can't imagine. I've never had it, and I'm very lucky. I've woken up and had like weird half asleep hallucinations, but like never to the point where my body is frozen.
Oh yeah. Before I forget to ask, how is the prose in this book? Like you were saying, the last one with like Range 4 Harry and stuff was like just
It's definitely way better written than the Range 4 Harry books, but it's not particularly like engrossing.
Because I feel like people might want to know, just because if they're going to pick up this shitty ass book,
it's a better read for sure.
Yeah, okay.
But he's certainly no like fucking author who's like prolific and whatnot, but he's way better than the fucking Range 4 Harry books by a long shot. So as her voice was coming through, he said he could still hear the waterfall noise, but it was slowly fading. And he finally was able to stand up at the foot of the bed with Francis next to him. He took a deep breath and he told himself that like he's got control of his body. He's kind of reaffirmations. He's okay. He's okay. He's okay. He said he was also getting really pissed. So he ran over while he had control of his body and grabbed the camera, and he just went out the bedroom door telling Francis to stay there. She didn't listen. She followed. He went right into the kitchen, and he went right into the frame of the kitchen door window. And he saw, he said, the UFO hovering about 150 feet away, that it was way too close. And he was afraid to show himself through the glass in case they saw him. And by now, his wife knew what was going on outside and why he needed to get a picture. So no matter what she said, he wasn't going to not do it. So she kind of just took a step back and just watched him. But he saw no reason to be stupid about it, he says, and that there was a way out so that if it couldn't see him, he was trying to find an angle to take a picture of this thing where he also wasn't seen by the craft because he was afraid that they would see him.
Could he like make out details at this distance?
He said it was 150 feet away, and that,
I mean, yeah, you like, could at 150 feet.
Yeah. But he doesn't really go over them very much because he's talked about what they look like, and they all kind of look the same at this point.
So it's we don't know if he was like seeing them inside.
Yeah,
the craft,
correct.
Or anything. Okay.
So he ended up creeping out the door and slipped under the back porch. And from there, he crawled over to some pompous grass. And he was in this.
Just use the Horizon Zero Dawn stealth system to get there.
Yeah. To give you a bad idea, the man is only in his tidy whities. He's completely just in his underwear with his camera. He writes that in the book. He makes that he describes himself as only in his undies.
Genuine question.
Yeah.
How many incidents has he had before this?
This incident is number six, I believe. He's had five or six. This is either
six
or seven.
And he has taken multiple photos at this point. And there's nothing in his brain that says the reason they were in your room is because they're aware of you taking the photos.
So that's actually like another theory, is that like he started lying about it and taking photos, and then aliens started showing up and abducting him for real because nobody was believing him. And then maybe that's why they showed up.
I like that. That's fun.
It's not a theory I prescribe to personally.
But they're like the aliens floated out. They're there. A crafty bunch.
Yeah, exactly. So he was in the pompous grass, completely in his underwear, just the Polaroid around his neck. And he says he doesn't remember feeling cold, even though it was maybe 40 degrees outside at the time. He said the UFO was to the north, just within the edge of his view, and it began to rise and fall smoothly, like basically bobbing up and down in the air with a slight glow. It would rise about 10 feet, glow a bright orange, he said, then descend again and fade to a pale orange that was hard to see.
And he was feeling warmth, or was he just like...
No, he wasn't feeling any warmth.
Not
he was
conscious
just,
of his body's temperature.
He's not conscious. I think the adrenaline is what's like fueling him here. He said from his left, it drifted directly in front of him, hovered there, very still and quote unquote picture perfect. And that's when he shot another photo. Now, in the long line of photos he's taken, this is considered number photo 13. But the photos that he sent to the newspaper Sentinel were only five of them under the name Mr. X. Now, everybody, we've already talked about it last episode, but the whole town knew who Mr. X was.
Zodiac
they all
killer.
Knew it was him.
The everybody Zodiac in killer town. Vibes, not good.
Yeah.
I don't like Mr. X. That makes me like this less. Makes me think this guy's weird now.
So this is picture 13. Flash went off, but this time he said he knew it would catch the UFO in the photo. He said he flinched down when he took the photo, but the UFO made no noticeable change. Like he tried to like hide the flash by taking the snapping picture while turning the camera down, like at the moment he took the picture, which is like, I don't see how that works.
That like, just seems personally. Like the picture doesn't come out, period.
It just comes out blurry. Surprise, surprise. Like it doesn't come out very like clear. He said for a few moments, he laid on the ground with pine straw poking his bare skin and then back onto his knees. He pulled the film and slipped it under the elastic waistband on his briefs that he was wearing. And behind him, the French door leading out from the rec room of his house opened slightly and he saw his wife calling to him. He answered something, but was way too absorbed watching the UFO moved away. He doesn't even say what he said. He's like, I responded, but I was so engrossed with the UFO bobbing in front of me. He said it continued to stay about 30 feet high. And then suddenly a bunch of smoke or steam or some kind of weird liquid came out of the bottom of what he considers the power source of this ship. I don't know why he thinks it's the power source, but that's what he says. And then later
tank.
That day, he quickly retrieved a plastic butter dish that the kids had left out and it was full of, and what he did is he went out there and he fucking scooped it up. He was like right into the butter dish and saved it. And he said at the time it was full of a bubbling liquid. And so he saved it for future analysis.
Bubbling liquid?
Yeah. A bubbling liquid kind of poured out of the bottom.
Why does he got to make it so unlikely? Okay. So he's saying, what is he like implying there? Like, do you think he's saying it's a leak? Like that?
No, I don't know. He says it's from a power source. Maybe it's like cooling liquid. Like he doesn't really try to bother trying to
just
figure
like
out what it is.
He's just like weird. Dripping a little bit.
Yeah, maybe it's like the antifreeze leaking out of the UFO. The shit needs to be fixed up. That's why it's stopping at Earth. It's just like it's like a fucking jalopy for a UFO. It's just starting to fucking shut down in front of dear old Ed Walters. So he said, yeah, he took that. He saved it for future analysis. And by the time he had went outside and to re-grab that with the butter dish to grab the shit, about a minute had passed. And at this point, the UFO was moving away. It was moving east away from him and closer to the edge of the wooded area right behind his home. And after about 400 feet from him, the UFO was still bobbing up and down while it moved away with that orange glow. He began having thoughts of like, was it having trouble? Was it thinking about landing? Was it looking at me and being cautious? He didn't know. Either way, he was keeping his eye on it. And that night, Ed Walters found himself abruptly going back to bed. After going back to bed, abruptly waking back up and just spending the whole night questioning whether the UFO that went away maybe landed somewhere nearby. Maybe it did land somewhere nearby after he lost sight of it as it went east. And the thought lingered for a long time, thinking like, maybe I should go look for it.
Did this motherfucker just like convince himself of like extra lore? I should go find it.
He got up from the bed, looked out through his bedroom window again, trying to strain to see through the darkness to see if it was there. He could see security lights from a nearby building, but not the UFO. He wanted to call the police, but he decided to just stay home and sleep for the night. You know what? We'll worry about it in the morning. He's seen it seven times already. Yeah, he's got this bubbling liquid. Yeah, there were creatures in his room this time around. But you know what? We'll call the cops another time. He was convinced that the UFO was still just over the tree line, hidden, hiding away, like it hadn't gone away completely. And the desire to find it sitting there helpless in a field somewhere became so overwhelming. It would dispel any of his doubts. And he's like, this is it. Okay. You know what? Actually, fuck it. At the risk of being labeled delusional, he was like, I'm going out. I'm going to go look for it. It landed. I know it landed. It must have landed. And so he left the house and began walking toward a field that was past the woods behind his house, hoping that he'd see the UFO, but realizing that it could be a ploy to lure him into the open.
He saw why I left these out for part two. He maybe saw something once at the beginning, once maybe from 150 feet away, and it
spewed some goo.
It took a piss on his lawn, and then he left. And then he was like, "It's around here. It's around here. I gotta go. It's there. It's there."
He genuinely convinced himself that because it was leaving slowly, that it like had to be here. Maybe it was near the field somewhere, and that he was going to fucking go find this thing, and he's going to find this fucking thing and watch it and get more pictures of it. So he fucking went to the widescreen doors at the end of his pool, and he waited there first, watching the darkness in dead silence for about a minute. Driven by his conviction, Walters attempted once more to approach the back door to get back inside when the mysterious glow suddenly reappeared. He quickly whipped back around, raising his camera, though his gaze remained fixated on the UFO, and he couldn't believe what he was seeing. This was not the same UFO that he had actually seen before. This one was different.
Larger. Like, just happened to be in the same neighborhood and popped by afterwards?
Yeah, this one was larger. It wasn't glowing orange, but glowing a white, and seemed to be lifting off the ground as if taking off from being landed.
Let me ask you a question, and maybe you know what I'm talking about here. I don't know if you do, like maybe you do when I ask the question, but you gotta like kind of meet me halfway on like how alien accounts go.
Yeah, sure. I'm with you.
Does he think it's like about him?
If he doesn't yet, he's about to.
All right. So this is starting to become become one of those like things where you just sit at home and you tell yourself a story over and over about what's so special about you.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's fair.
Right. Yeah. All right.
Off the ground being a white glow, it suddenly stopped midair, and the grass below where it was hovering or taking off from began to glow. And so in that moment, Walter snapped photo number 14, though the flash did not go off this time, as the cube, like the power for the flash, was spent and there was no flash left for the camera. And so he pulled the film from the camera, tucked it into his underpants like the other one, and found he was like satisfied. He's like, fuck yeah, got another photo. In the ensuing moments that followed, Walters found himself running back and forth, moving from the widescreen of door from his house to the edge of the pool, up and down the stairs. And finally, he went to the kitchen door and it popped open again, revealing his wife stepping outside and like she's watching him through the door. Just imagine being his wife, underweared husband with a camera, sprinting back and forth from the end of his pool to the door, to the end of his pool to the door, looking to the sky, taking a photo, running back and forth. And then he finally comes back on like one of them and she just like opens the door and she quietly whispered to him, "Babe, what are you doing?
Babe, you good?"
And you know what his response was? He quickly and equally softly whispered, "What are you doing?"
That's like what somebody says back to Gordon Ramsay on Kitchen Nightmares.
That's literally the interaction that like the Predator has with Schwarzenegger at the end of that movie. It's almost the same thing.
The UFO started slowly coming toward the house, at least according to Ed. And despite not caring much about having no flash for his camera anymore, Walters just wanted Frances to go back inside so he could go back to taking pictures and see if she could go in and grab energy for the flash. She wanted to go get more batteries for the flash for his camera. So he's like, go inside, get me batteries. And so she goes back inside. And now only Walters can see that the UFO is coming back towards his yard from the right side, stopping at a nearby fence under some small oak trees. And now the UFO is intently heading in his direction. As Walters he drops down to his knees under some tree cover, peering through his chain link fence. He suddenly felt something bump his shoulder. Startled, he yelled, "Holy shit, what are you doing here?" As he baffled and whipped around to see his wife there, because he asked her to go get fucking flash
right.
cubes.
She did it because she's being supportive.
She handed it to him and she's like, "Quick, take a picture fast," being supportive. And at that moment, the two previous photographs slipped from under Walter's waistband, threatening to fall out of his shorts. He quickly retrieved them, handed them to Frances, and the UFO then moved towards them faster than they could track. One moment it was 400 feet away, and then the next it was directly overhead. And in disbelief, Walters took another photo of the UFO, hovered in an agitated state, he considered it, although the resulting image was very blurry, while the tree in the foreground was the only thing that cleared.
So much time so much equipment, so much effort to take some seriously shitty pictures of some flying saucers so close to him.
I know.
With a real camera. Like, what happened here? Like, this is like if you did family photos, right? Like, you set up your family and like took photos of them, and they came out like blurry. Like he, how long was this going on? 10 minutes?
Yeah, this is all happening within maybe 10 or so minute span.
It's just so much time for it to be around him, not to capture a single like definitive photo. There's some that look kind of neat of the ones that I've seen.
But to go air on this, you know, and I'm not saying I believe him, but you play devil's advocate. UFOs are notoriously difficult to capture on film, and they're always really blurry. And the only good ones we have are like heat centered ones from the military, right? We don't have good UFOs even now of these things. Maybe there's something to that. Maybe they're like, you know, some sort of camouflage or something. I'm not saying that's what's happening. I'm just saying a little bit.
I mean, like anything's possible.
Yeah, exactly. See, thank you, Jesse. You're starting to get it.
Yeah, no, like anything.
That's appreciate it.
Could be demons.
At some point 3 weeks later, when he was recounting the event, he actually incorrectly reported which photo was taken first out of the ones that he took in that moment. And the overwhelming nature of the experience, he says, seemed to have caused a weird memory lapse, and he couldn't recall part of the encounter. So he went to a hypnotic regression.
Oh,
and
thank God.
Yeah. And he got, you know, the full story as to what happened. He says he had pulled the film from the camera, pushed it toward Francis while shouting, let's go, run. He darted across the 30 feet to the terrace steps that led up to the pool level, expecting Francis to be right behind him as he hastily took another photo. After running up the stairs and removing the film from the camera, Walters tucked it in his waistband. However, after the sighting, the photo was missing, and he had no recollection of even taking it.
What?
Yeah, that last photo, probably the clearest one. All the coolest shit.
He can't remember it, and he doesn't have it.
Can't remember it?
Yep. The UFO, he said, was gliding now slowly over the roof of his house, and Walter stopped, aimed, and captured photo 16. At that moment, he realized Francis was no longer behind him. Panicked, he called out to her, only to be jolted by a commanding voice in his head, simply saying, "We are here for you.
You will not defeat us. You will not defeat us. We are Nintendo. You will not defeat us."
Yeah, the aliens, they're here for him. Now, whether they're here to take him, I don't know what they mean by that. But in that moment, in a rush, he yelled out for his wife again as he pulled out the film from the camera. He threw the picture onto the wooden deck at the back porch. Suddenly, another white flash filled his mind, and he felt it as if he were falling. His vision blurred, and he distinctly remembered feeling very cold. In an instant, Walters collided with the chain link fence head first, ending up next to Francis. The exact amount of time that had passed remained unclear to him, only later accounted for through hypnotic regression. For over a year, Walters claims he had no memory of being separated from Francis, who was still kneeling where he had left her, staring into the sky when he came to.
Do you think they'd sit and go like, how are we going to make this make sense? What do we need to add? Hold on. How do we add it in? Okay, where's the memory lapse?
How can we figure this shit out?
How do we remember this? Why do we know this now? How do we get this extra information in there? After the fact, years later,
so 3 weeks after the fact is when he had the interview where things were like not like in chronological order. He had the regression, and all that shit happened over the course of like a year or so. Exactly. Jesse's shaking his head.
And, you know, sorry, that's for the visual people. I'm having a whole time with this one.
So going back, there was a dizziness swirling in his head, and his stomach was kind of feeling nauseous, he said. And he remembers managing to look at Francis and ask after it was like all kind of coming to a close, are you okay? And he remembers she responded with an emotionless yes. This was unusual, he claims, as Francis never typically answered with a single word. Still disoriented, Walters disregarded this peculiarity.
My wife was usually a lot louder and more annoying, but this time she was very calm, which was rare for her.
He disregarded this peculiarity and then followed her gaze back to the sky where she was apparently staring. And he saw that the UFO continued to rock back and forth about 30 feet above the sheltering oak trees in the distance. Walters hadn't kept track of the exposures, but he noticed that there were no pull tabs sticking out of his camera, indicating that the film pack was empty. He ran out of film. He took every photo he could. Francis still held three exposures in her hand with a plastic bag containing the flash cubes, which is the batteries, flash things for the Polaroid, and the film lying on the ground at her knees next to the fence. Walters retrieved another film pack, loaded it into the camera, and aimed it at the UFO, which was still holding Francis's attention.
And he got a perfect in focus, good, clear picture of it that has been proven without a doubt to be real.
Yes, the bottom of the UFO pulsated with energy, yet there was no sound. The sight was overwhelming, the air, he said, felt heavy, and the hair on his arm stood on end. He pressed the shutter button, and the flash flooded the area as he took photo 17.
Francis shouted something. The camera in his hands.
It just fucking exploded in his hands. Francis shouted something either to him or at the UFO, followed by, "Did you get it? Let's go. Run, run, run." Walters grabbed her by the arm, and together they sprinted back to the house. They reached the back porch, and the UFO slowly glided over the house, moving at the pace of a person walking. As Francis tripped and fell onto the wooden deck near the screen porch door, Walters stepped back out from under the porch and raised the camera to take yet another photo. Just as he prepared to capture the image, the UFO's bottom ring brightened and it vanished before he could press the shutter. The blue beam could have targeted them at any time as they were completely exposed, but no one was actually hit with the blue beam. And thus ends that particular sighting. One of the more involved
heroin,
ones
where
lots of things happened. Now, other sightings do happen, but around this time enter two skeptics that, well, they start as skeptics. They're MUFON members. And these two individuals by the name of Don and Bob, Don and Bob, both from MUFON, were sent out to Gulf Breeze because, like I said last episode, this had spread nationally. This story spread like wildfire and it went to all kind of areas. And MUFON, of course, was like wildly interested in getting this documented as best they could. However, unlike the small town of Gulf Breeze, not everybody outside of Gulf Breeze knew who Mr. X was. He was still anonymous. So these two MUFON investigators decided, hey, we've got these five photos that they were posted in the Gulf Breeze Sentinel. Why don't we head out into Gulf Breeze at night when these photos were taken and walk the neighborhood streets taking pictures of everybody's houses at various angles to try and figure out which one of these homes belongs to Mr. X without telling anybody. These dudes were just in the middle of the night walking the streets and be like, fuck, okay, hang on, maybe not this one. And Frances says she remembers seeing them one night out there taking pictures, but they actually never went out to interact with them. So yeah, they went out mega nerds and were like
NPCs we're just gonna go take pictures. In Skyrim, just like on a schedule going and doing it and not talking to anyone.
We need more of this from MUFON. This is the kind of shit I'm here for, where they're like, we're going to go investigate and we're going to figure out what's up. And I'm here for it.
Yeah, I would. This is like how, like, I love that. That's how they were like, let's just figure this out, you know, with what evidence we have and try and make this.
My thing is, what's the logic of like, that's like going to, like, it's like being like, there's a robber in the neighborhood and then like posting up at a house that he's already been to catch.
No, the idea is that Mr. X sent the stuff in and they have camera angles, but no name. And they're trying to figure out who this person is so they can talk to the person, because it's very clear that Mr. X doesn't want to be identified for fear of being like ridiculed. So they go down there and they're like, yo, let's just look for camera angles and figure out. It's the same thing as GeoGuessr, basically. They're GeoGuessing where this dude is so they can talk to him. I don't think it's like malicious. I think they're like, this is the person who's hiding and we want to know if this is real.
They're absolutely mega nerds.
That's kind of badass, to be honest.
And they all have MUFON badges too, so they have this like air of official like kind of atmosphere around them because they have the badges. They're dressing nice. They look like yeah. And seeing them and like knowing that they're around for Ed, he knew at this point he wasn't gonna be able to hide who he was much longer. And if they ever showed up, he would just maybe be honest with them and see what like maybe they could help him out essentially. So he said the next time he saw them, he would try and get a picture of the UFO, them being the UFOs, and that no matter what, he would call the newspaper, tell them when, where, and who, and plus he would then call the MUFON and make a full report with them. They would get his name, but if asked, they would withhold it from public. Like, I'll give you my name, but don't fucking tell anybody else. So, you know, on December 23rd, 1987, he'd begun his morning routine checking for, his schedule. He was still operating his business at this particular time and he still had work to go and do. That day, while he was out working.
Was he working like regular?
Yeah, he was still doing his contracting work.
Did it affect his
productivity? Not right away. It did later, but for a while, no, not really, because, people knew him and were like trusted him and relied on him and were friends with
no reason for him to like
lie.
Run a scam or some shit. Yeah.
Yeah. As far as they are aware. On this particular day, he had another UFO encounter with three of them, all of them just hovering over the tree lines. He said he couldn't believe his eyes, and a chill ran back up his spine. And he tried to like snap out of it and stop being frozen in place. And he decided that they must have some kind of screening cloaking device because he couldn't really get a good look at them no matter how long he would stare at them. And a lot of other people were not seeing them. He's like, he doesn't understand like why he was only able to see them a little bit and nobody else seemed to notice them at the time. By the time he ran for his camera, he says, and he returned back, one of the craft had lifted higher than the other two. And that's when he took photo 18. Immediately afterward, the highest craft turned brighter and then winked out of existence like they had many other two, then quickly followed by the other two. This is where the investigators eventually start coming in. After this particular encounter, the two that from MUFON end up wanting to speak with this guy. And they actually do figure out where he lives based on the photos that they actually took. They knew like where the area was, and through deduction, they finally got in contact with Ed, and they set up their very first meeting with him at his house. Now, this is back in still 1987. We're late into 1987. 1988 is coming around. The first meeting between Ed, Don, and Bob took place at Ed's house in Gulf Breeze. And the initial encounter was for the MUFON people, crucial for establishing a working relationship with them and the primary witness. If they could get in with Ed, they would potentially have a first class ticket to UFOs popping up all the damn time. So before their arrival, Bob and Don had made contact with Walters by phone, arranged the meeting. Walters seemed super cooperative and expressed a strong interest in sharing his experiences with these people. He saw them as credible investigators, and he had already been in contact with the media and other UFO enthusiasts, but recognized the importance of MUFON, having a formal investigation by MUFON. So on the day of the meeting, Bob and Don showed up in the home in late afternoon. The house was a typical suburban residence, they said, modest, well-kept, with a backyard that opened up to a wooded area, and Walters greeted them at the door, and the three men exchanged introductions. Now, both the two MUFON investigators said they were struck by Walter's demeanor. He came across as some sincere and composed, though clearly affected by the experiences he claimed to have had. Walters led them into the living room where the initial interview would take place. And the room was comfortable, neatly arranged with a few of the Polaroid photographs of the alleged UFOs displayed on the coffee table in front. Once they were settled, Don Bob began the interview, which would set the tone for their subsequent interactions moving forward. Walter started by explaining the purpose of their, Bob and Don started explaining the purpose of their visit, outlining the process they intended to follow. He emphasized that their goal was to understand Ed's experiences and to verify the evidence that had been presented. Walters listened attentively and agreed to provide as much information as possible. He began by recounting the very first sighting that happened on November 11th. He described the evening in detail, from noticing the bright light outside his window to stepping outside and seeing the disc-shaped craft near himself. He detailed the shape, size, movement of the craft, as well as the intense beam of light that he claimed had paralyzed him momentarily. And as he spoke with them, the two of them took detailed notes, occasionally asking clarifying questions along the way. Bob was particularly interested in the photographs, which had become a central piece of evidence for the Gulf Breeze case as a whole. It's what made this thing take off nationally. And Ed explained how he had managed to capture the images using his Polaroid camera, often in moments of fear and adrenaline. He described the conditions under which each photograph was taken, including the lighting, the distance of the craft, and his own physical state at the time.
And how shaky his hands were. Yeah.
To these guys, this man is the perfect.
He sounds respectable. Like, yeah. He sounds respectable so far. The fact that he seems affected, you know, the fact that they like took their time kind of like not flirting with him, but like arranging a respectable meeting on right terms, you know, it's cool.
Exactly that. They also explored the emotional and psychological impact of the sightings on Walters, not just him, but his whole family. And they spoke, Walter spoke candidly about the fear and anxiety that had gripped him since the sightings began. And he expressed concern for his family's safety and his frustration with the skepticism that he began encountering from some quarters of the public. They noted that his, emotional responses as part of his overall assessment and didn't seem like he was making it up at the time. By the end of this first meeting, they had a clearer picture of Ed's experiences and were ready to move forward with their investigation. So they agreed on a plan. They discussed the next steps with Ed, which included conducting site visits to the locations of the sightings, further interviews, and possibly conducting surveillance to witness the phenomena firsthand. And Walter seemed wholly cooperative and offered all the assistance that he could. The meeting ended on a positive note, with all parties agreeing to stay in close communication as the investigation progressed. And the two MUFON investigators left with a substantial more information than they expected. And they began planning the next phase of their investigation as they departed the home. So far,
do we know if they were like on the vibes too? Like they were like, oh, this is tight. This guy's not faking. Like
so far. Yeah. Because so far, Ed is presenting, he's not presenting like he's lying. He's seemingly telling the truth and he's not trying to impede their investigation. Very much seeming like wanting to cooperate. So for a MUFON investigator, this is like jack fucking pot. We have something here. Maybe we'll actually get the evidence we've been looking for. So after the initial meeting with Ed, Don and Bob plan to conduct site visits to further investigate the locations where the Walters had reported seeing UFOs. This step was crucial to verifying the details provided by Walters and gathering any additional evidence that might support or refute his claims. So they coordinated with Ed and they went out and they looked at all a majority of the sites. The first one was the backyard. This is where the very first one took place. They inspected the area kind of up and down, paying close attention to the tree line, position of the house, and any nearby light sources that could have influenced Ed's observations at the time. They took detailed notes, photographs of their own, ensuring that they documented the exact conditions under which Walters claimed to have seen the UFO. They even tried to recreate the sighting a little bit. Walters walked the investigators through the event of the sighting as they occurred in his backyard. He pointed out where the craft had hovered, the angle from which he took the photographs, and where he was standing when the beam of light allegedly struck him. And the two MUFON investigators continue asking probing questions to ensure that they fully understood the spatial dynamics of the lighting. Because that's a lot of what this is going to be relying on. Because the photos aren't so great for them, it's the lighting, the angles, how it should react. They should have a realistic understanding.
Yeah, exactly. Physics of light.
Like we tried to figure out last time with the size of the ships based on like where they were with the tree line and the road.
I applied like 2 seconds of thinking to that and it seems totally fake after you thinking about it.
Yeah, and they even tried to consider various environmental factors that could have affected even just Walter's personal perception, like reflections, shadows, presence of other objects or lights in the area. They were particularly interested in determining if there were any natural artificial sources of light that could explain the bright lights that Walters always described. Then they visited the second site, the one of the road incident, the one where he pulled over to the side as he saw it landing in like a field nearby and some like aliens came out. Very similarly, they went out that way. They revisited the scene. They documented it as very thoroughly as they could and even did a small reenactment as best they could. And then the third site they went to was the field landing site. Where he took them to the field where they had allegedly seen the UFO land, where the small humanoid figures exited. This was one of the more dramatic ones that we covered last week, maybe the most dramatic one last week. The investigators also thoroughly searched the area for any signs of landing traces, such as burnt grass, depression in the soil, or any other anomalies that might indicate a craft that had touched down. And they also looked for any disturbances in the vegetation or soil that could be consistent with the description of the landing. They also compared the site with the photographs from Walters that had taken alleged landing, and they looked for matching features in the landscape. So they're just trying to figure this shit out as best they can. The next step after visiting the sites, just documenting everything, was the stakeout sessions. And this is where some of the most
proud. They're making me proud so far.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, like, they made me proud for a while too.
Some good ass research. Yeah.
Yeah. So after the initial interview, seeing all the sites, Don and Bob decided to conduct stakeout sessions in hopes of witnessing the UFO phenomena firsthand. These stakeouts were crucial for the investigation as they offered the potential to capture new evidence or validate Walter's claims directly. These sessions were mostly informal, but always highly anticipated. They were always very excited to do them. And potentially provide direct observational data that this investigation so thoroughly needed. So the decision was made to conduct the stakeouts primarily from Walter's backyard, which had been the site of several of his reported sightings. The location offered a very clear view of the sky and the surrounding wooded area, making it an ideal spot for observations. And the investigators also considered other vantage points around Gulf Breeze, but decided to focus on the area closest to Walter's home for the initial sessions. So now that the Walters family has a couple of fucking MUFON nerds hanging out in the backyard all night long. And what I wouldn't give to be those MUFON guys. That sounds so fun. I'm not fully I'm in. I'm like, this
just
is
the
it.
Vibes of being on an alien stakeout alone are tight. That's pretty fun. Get the beers popping. Maybe a little Game Boy for when you're off shift, you know?
Little
would you rather, you know what I'm saying? It's a good vibe out there in the dunes or whatever.
Yeah, and in the dunes.
What do you want to call them? The loam hills? The swamp mounds of Gulf
swamp
Breeze?
Swamp mounds.
The briny, brackish soil of Gulf Breeze, Florida?
I can't wait to visit Gulf Breeze. The stakeouts were scheduled for evenings and late at night, obviously, mostly coinciding with the times that Walters had reported seeing the UFOs in the first place. And they wanted to make sure that the weather was generally clear for these. So they try to like plan ahead as best they could, really like taking into account like as much as possible. Like I said, these boys do MUFON proud, at least like for now. So the first stakeout session, Bob and Don arrived at Walter's home just before dusk. They set up their equipment in the backyard, positioning their cameras on tripods to capture any potential sightings. Walters joined them shortly after, and the three men settled in for what could potentially be a long night of just waiting. The mood during the stakeout was a mix of anticipation and camaraderie, they say. Walters, Bob, and Don engaged in light conversation, discussing other UFO cases and their theories about what might be causing the phenomenon in the Gulf Breeze. These conversations help pass the time, obviously, but also to keep in mind, as Jesse pointed out last week, there are also airfields fucking right there. Three of them. I think we came out with like a total of
three.
There may
be more, but there's three that I found immediately.
Yeah. The first few hours, sky was super quiet. The investigators noted the movement of the stars, the occasional passing airplane, distant lights from nearby towns. They were vigilant, making sure to document the smallest anomalies as they should be doing. But nothing ended up happening, at least at first. The first unusual sighting happened around 11 p.m. Bob noticed a faint light on the horizon, moving slowly across the sky. He alerted the others, and they immediately focused their cameras and binoculars on the light. The object appeared to be a small glowing orb moving in a straight line with no noticeable deviation in speed or altitude. Now, the group discussed what the light could be. Walters was quick to suggest that it might be the same type of craft that had seen before. Fuck, the aliens are back. However, it was a little smaller. It seemed smaller and more distant. Bob and Don, however, were cautious, suggesting that it could just be a plane or even just a satellite moving across the sky. But apparently right away, Ed got up and was like, fuck, they're back. And like, that's what drew their attention. He's like, they're here. And they were like, I don't know, maybe not. And then after about 10 minutes, it disappeared behind a bank of clouds. The investigators were obviously unable to determine exactly what it was, but they spent some time discussing it, and it looked like a dot of light, like in the sky. Like they describe it as it potentially being an airplane or a satellite. You know what those look up like far away.
They just
Yeah. Yeah. And it wasn't moving in any erratic fashion. It was just kind of going straight. And if you live in any area where light pollution is not just awful, if you stare at the night sky long enough, you are going to see
there's so many satellites stuff up there. Yeah.
Dude, you see planes, like even at my mom's house, like, the last time I was there, I just stare at the sky because I want to see UFO. But I counted like 7 satellites that you just see. They're everywhere.
That's the thing that's crazy that we don't think about is just like we put like over the years, like starting in like around the time that flying saucer stuff started becoming like a big thing again, we started like putting a bunch of shit in the sky. And a lot of it is just still up there flying around like shit.
You can go online and see digital maps of all our satellites, and it's just like an impenetrable layer.
Shout out to the mathematicians who have to plan. I mean, I guess space is big, but like shout out to them who are like, we have a window of where we can send stuff up because there's just shit flying around up there.
We got to like lock that down. That's so embarrassing.
So the first night was uneventful, but they were still encouraged and were like, hey, it's just the first night. So a few nights later, they planned another one, and they swung back over and to conduct the second stakeout, of this investigation. For this session, the team brought additional equipment, including a video camera with night vision capabilities. They also had a more structured plan for documenting any sightings with specific roles assigned to each person. Like one person would focus on photography. Another person focuses on note taking. So they're not just doing the same thing. The second stakeout began similarly to the first, with hours of watching the sky without any unusual activity. The night was darker with fewer clouds than last time, offering an even clearer view of the stars, and the investigation remained focused despite any lack of, beside what seemed like a lack of activity. And just after midnight, the group spotted another light, this time directly overhead. The light was brighter than the first, and it moved in a seeming zigzag pattern, which caught everyone's attention. Ed was convinced that this was a UFO, but Bob and Don were again cautious, noting that the light could be a satellite reflecting sunlight in an unusual way. And I love this because this happened to me. It was back in my mom's house, and I remember seeing something move in the sky, and it seemed like it was kind of like adjusting randomly. But upon research, it's the way the light is reflecting, plus how it comes through the atmosphere, that looks like you're adjusting, but your eye also can't adjust for the minute movements that's happening. So it looks like it.
It's definitely wigged me out before, for sure. I've been like, you immediately like, oh, moving. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, they were still cautious, but again, Ed was like, fuck, they're back. They took photographs and videoed the light while Walters attempted to capture it with his Polaroid. They observed the light for several minutes before it suddenly shot off at a higher speed, disappearing from view. This movement was unusual, and this part left the investigators intrigued, but not fully convinced. You know, that was interesting, but who knows? You know, we can't say one or the other. After the second stakeout, they gathered in his living room and reviewed the evidence they had just collected. They looked at the photographs, the video footage, discussing the quality of the images and whether the lights could be explained by conventional means. And at the end of it, there was kind of mixed feelings. Walters was excited and felt that the sighting supported his previous experiences. This was aliens. They're fucking here. He knows it. Bob and Don remained more reserved. They acknowledged that the lights were unusual, but emphasized the need for further analysis before drawing conclusions. But the way it disappeared at the end of the night was enough to be like, fuck yeah, okay, maybe there's something fucking here.
That's what we want. That's the winning way. If that's how all UFO investigations went, was like a stakeout with like realistic breakdown of the evidence collected, that's money. That should be like, there should be like a textbook about that. I bet there is. I bet MUFON has.
I'm sure there is. Yeah. So these stakeouts were not providing preventative proof, but it's only been two nights and there's something there. They're excited. So the next one was planned. And once again, this stakeout took place in the backyard of Ed. And this location this stakeout location kind of became their regular place. They would occasionally do some other areas, but for the most part, it was very much in his backyard. And the event happened late at night, past midnight, but something happened this time. During this stakeout, the group noticed a series of lights in the sky. These lights moved in a way that was consistent with some of the previous sightings reported by Walters, which heightened the team's anticipation. But moreover, there were civilian sightings of lights in the sky around Gulf Breeze. And according to people who live there, still are to this day, which is cool. It's very much a hotspot. And that the people who in just because I can say hotspot, Jesse, not mean aliens.
No. I didn't say anything. I said nothing. I just squinted and was thinking we just got done talking about three airports.
That's what I'm saying.
I didn't say anything, though. You brought it up that I was thinking it, which is different.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm thinking chicken tenders.
Hello, listener. Hello, Fresh. With HelloFresh, you get farm-fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. We all know home-cooked meals are so much better for you, but you don't always have time to pull it off. But with HelloFresh handling all the meal planning, shopping, and most of the prep, it's easier than ever to get dinner on the table, quick and painless. There's always new flavors to explore with an ever-changing menu of 50 recipes to choose from every week. Just pick your meals and your delivery date. It's that simple. Sometimes it's just, you know, it gets late and you can't be bothered and you just want to order a pizza, but don't do that. Just get HelloFresh and they give you delicious, pre-portioned meals and they're good for you. They're actually bloody good for you. I shouldn't say bloody. For free breakfast for life, go to HelloFresh.com/freechill. One free breakfast item per box while subscription is active. That's free breakfast for life. Just by going to HelloFresh.com/freechill. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit.
So the lights moved in a way that was consistent with some of the previous sightings by Walters. And as Walters watched the lights, he became increasingly absorbed in the experience. As in, like, he was locked in. He wasn't moving. He was just watching. And according to the account, as he was trying to understand the nature of the lights, suddenly he experienced an overwhelming mental impression. Ugh. Ed later recounted
in his mind,
like last time he heard, we are here for you. This time he suddenly, and he says forcefully, heard, in sleep, you know.
What now? Whoops, sorry, what?
In sleep, You know.
Oh, so I thought you were doing a Yoda, like, in sleep, you know. I thought you were doing it like that. I was like, oh, that makes sense.
In sleep, you know.
So this is going to be how he gets out of having to show these alien investigators all the times that he's having the aliens. And so now it happens in his bedroom.
Maybe. Maybe. We'll see.
Maybe.
He did not hear this phrase as a voice, but rather felt it as a strong invasive thought. And Walters believed this was a form of telepathic communication from the beings associated with the UFOs that were currently in the sky.
You will not defeat me,
Star Fox. Walters described the experience in the book by saying, quote, "It wasn't like hearing a voice. It was like a feeling, a thought that came into my mind. In sleep, you know. It was as if someone had put the thought directly into my head."
Why would they put it in that wording if it wasn't a sound? Like, why would it need to be in, like, archaic?
Because they're all Yodas, dude.
They're all little gray men. Okay?
Everybody's a little Yoda sometimes. We okay, are. Fozzie.
Whatever.
This voice left Walters shaken, and he goes on to say that this message for him implied that there were things that he could only understand or remember in a dreamlike state or through altered consciousness. That's what he believes this message meant.
Well, obviously.
When you're sleeping, you know, that's what he meant.
In sleep, you know. He didn't say when you're sleeping, you know. It just said in sleep, you know.
So now we know that this guy's like not very imaginative either. Like his plot's not that good. He's just like, yeah, sometimes when I like get fucked up, I'm like more alien-y. You know what I mean?
Dude, in sleep, he's I knew.
More alien-y.
When I get fucked up, like when my consciousness is unreliable, that's like when the truth comes. Like when I'm not conscious, when my subconscious mind is in control of my body and I'm not actually thinking and it's just an unfettered dream time, that's when I'm able to see the truth of the aliens.
You get
yeah,
it.
Well, that's, yeah. That's what the aliens said. It's not his implication.
I know. Dream time.
Yeah, but that's like, what he's getting from that them. Thought,
yeah.
Yeah.
I guess that's true. Yeah.
They're telling him, just get really fucked up so that no one will ever believe you. And then you'll know the truth. They say, go as close as you can to sleeping to understand your memories that are inexplicably missing. Do we ever get to why the memories are missing? Is he ever made
aware as to why they're missing? He imagines that so at one point in the book, he talks about potentially having an implant in his brain. And that might be it. But like, we don't, you know, we're not going to really go over that because there's a lot of stuff you want to go read. Just go read it on your own. In one of the psychic impressions, he actually hears a name as well. Zehas.
Okay. Here we are.
He that learns.
Sounds like something I just made up 6 minutes ago.
Yeah. We're plugging the braids into the horses now, baby. We're going in.
This in this moment, as he's getting in sleep, you know, and he hears the word Zehas, leaves him shaking. He felt that the message implied that there were things he could only understand, like I said, in that dreamlike state. Drums. And shortly after experiencing this mental impression, Walters began to feel unusual physical sensations, particularly in his face. This added another layer of distress. And he felt a tingling in his face and he ran over to Bob and Don and he was like, quick, is my face moving? I can feel something. Is it tingling or going numb? What's happening to my face? And they were like, nothing's happening.
What the fuck are you talking about, dude? You're freaking out now. Calm down, bro.
They were watching him during this whole thing, observed him closely after he mentioned the sensation. They looked at his face, but didn't notice any visible changes or movement. And despite this, they noted Walter's clear distress and the fact that he genuinely believed something was happening to him. And Walters continued to feel uneasy, describing the sensation as if something was pressing on his head and controlling his thoughts. This experience was deeply unsettling for him and further convinced him that the beings associated with these UFOs were exerting some form of control over him.
So we're talking about a gut feeling here.
But in his face, a face feeling,
a sinus infection.
Right. Like taking too much vitamin D. He felt it. He was like,
revved.
Good God. He fell to the ground, and as the two investigators came over, he said over their shoulder, he saw the UFO arrive, and he quickly took a picture. But after the flash, the two UFO investigators turned around, but he said it was too late. It had taken off.
Fuck,
but
he got a photo,
and there's something blurry kind of in the background, but like,
fuck off. Knows? This dude hit the Panera caffeinated lemonade too hard and had a fucking hallucination.
Now, unlike you boys who hear about this, who may even could have been there and would have been like, what is this guy doing? These two were bought left it. Shaken.
Bought they it, hook, line, like, singer. I can't believe we didn't turn around fast enough to see the alien that was right behind us.
Holy fuck. He's going through something awful. He's visibly disturbed, both by the phrase that he's hearing in his head, the physical sensation on his face. Bob and Don were concerned for Walters, but not for his mental health. But because he might be getting harassed by aliens.
Dude, this is how you know that somebody's like not from the city and doesn't see like people with like severe mental illness all the time outside.
yeah. Like, yeah, very much.
Like this person, he's like, there's something in my face. Like this would make me feel unsafe if I was around this guy because I would start to believe that this guy was just now just like, in his own zone. Like we're like, if this was me and it, cause I guess maybe it's cause this is 40 years ago now, right? Like 87, 86, something like that. Like that it seems quaint now to like that they would be, you know, it's like if I went and did like the moonwalk in the Old West or something, people would be like, what the fuck did you just do? Are you magic? Are you a wizard? But I don't know. Like, it's like the kind of like, crazy that America like drives people. I don't think has been seen in the MUFON, in the world of MUFON yet. Maybe I don't know and because it just feels like that. It feels like a guy who's got riding on his van at this point.
And this is the '80s, and like these two MUFON guys have been spending years investigating and probably getting nothing or dead ends. And now they have somebody in front of them that's putting on a believable enough act to seem like he's truly shaken. And they're like, "Oh fuck, this is it." And why they're just like, maybe they want to believe a little bit. Maybe they're like sure, really hoping to get believe. Something. Yeah.
That's why they're part of the group.
At one point, they talk about how brave Ed is in interviews later on, about how like brave Ed was and that they always believe.
They should have taken him to the hospital. They should have helped him out.
This man.
They should have gotten some psychiatric help, man.
In one investigation, they're staking out the street and the two investigators are in this. I don't have this in the script. This is just from the book. And like, they're in their car. It's just the two MUFON investigators on the road. They're having a little bit to drink. And then out of nowhere, Ed in his underwear comes like running out into the streets. He says he sees something, a UFO. And they come out of his car and they're like, no, Ed, that's a plane. And just as they were like, oh, it's a plane, he turned around to the other side and was like, there it is, the UFO. And he took a picture as their backs were turned. And dude, once again, it was gone. And when they turned around and they were like, fuck, we missed it.
Wait, but did the photo, was it a real? Did
it had get
the
photo? Something blurry in the background. Something blurry in the background. But like.
Interesting. Can't wait.
Anybody else take a photo with this camera?
No.
No, of course not. That would be sick.
No, as far as I'm aware, only Ed uses camera, as far as I know. But I think the camera was like inspected, though. I think like the camera was looked at.
Oh, they inspected the camera, but like...
in between the pictures, like when he was taking the pictures, they inspected it? Or like after he got home and he threw away the thing?
Oh, God. I couldn't give you a specific. Remember, I'm not entirely sure. It's a Polaroid camera, yeah.
They're getting instant pictures. It's popping out of there.
The pictures are coming out, but you can still like put a little something on the camera lens or hang a little...
I think it's more like... he's moving rapidly when he takes a picture. So whatever he takes a picture of, no matter the light source is maybe blurring, you know, like it could be the street light for fucking all I know. That's just like another fucking interaction that I just did not put into the goddamn script. But like it was, that's the kind of like close call.
How many times are you going to fall for the like, look behind you. It was just there. Here's a picture of it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's got to feel weird to you. That's got to feel like you're getting tricked, right?
Yeah, you would think that's how it would feel. Now, but here's the thing. The investigator saw a couple of weird lights in the skies a couple times with him. So it's not like they're having no experiences. To me, maybe they're having just enough.
You're saying they've seen airplanes. Like he was saying when he was alone.
Well, but there was the one that took off really quickly at the end, and then one that kind of did a little zigzag. Again, all things that could be explained, but like there's a room there, enough for there like to be a cognitive dissonance, I think. Just enough for them to be like, well, maybe he's telling the truth. And again, they're also being sold because this man is putting on a hell of an act. Like, he's acting, and maybe he is, maybe he isn't, but like, his distress seems real to the two of them. And that's what they're kind of going on. Now, to Francis's part, you know, the wife, you know, she was shaken by some of these sightings, but she never saw nearly as much as Ed did. But there is a quote reflecting on on one of the events in the backyard where they were staking it out and they saw like the one that zipped away really quickly. She goes on, when Francis saw it, she said she knew she wasn't crazy, but also like scared her a little bit, but because of how it was like moving weirdly. And then she did see it zip off really quickly in a way that she had never seen before. She goes on to say, quote, I saw something up there. It wasn't a plane and it wasn't a star. It was just hovering. And then it moved in a way I've never seen before. So like, that's her sighting. And if we want to believe the wife, I don't know. Like, I don't know if she's just trying to play along with her husband. I don't know if she thinks she's going crazy. If she is also fucking seeing things, who fucking know? I don't know. Now remember that bubbly goop he scooped up?
Yeah. The alien blood, from the xenomorph.
Remember the bubbly goop?
Yeah.
Don't know where it is. Don't know what happened.
It's gone.
It's gone.
The butter dish.
And he claims that men in black showed up at their front door, threatening and asking for it. But he said he lied to them and said he sent the photos into the newspaper. And they said to him, if you're lying, we'll be back. He was lying. They never came back. So like, could have been just like,
he outsmarted Will Smith.
He got, he's better than Will Smith. He just all he had to take. So the night concluded and the stakeout eventually led to essentially nothing. And they did stakeouts for 6 full nights. And this event right here is about the most action they ever fucking get.
This just sounds fun. Like, if there was a GameCube out there, this would have been a rip, dude.
Right. Yeah. And over this week or so, the MUFON investigators are convinced that Ed is telling the truth, even if they walk away with very little evidence that he is actually telling the truth. And at this point, too, they actually take Ed to a place where they said they were sent photographs by, quote unquote, a Mr. Bill Believer, who said, I also saw photos here. And he sent those into the newspaper, the Sentinel, as well.
The man's name was Bill Believer?
That the name like he went X. by.
Yeah.
Is the name
okay,
he went
okay.
by.
Okay, I was about to be like, brah. Yeah.
So they went out there as well, and they went looking for all that shit to see what it was. However, in the future, when there was copyright checks on who the photos from Bill Believer belonged to, it wound back up at Ed Walters.
That's what I was going to say. I want to see the pics because I bet you they look a shitload like Ed's.
And so, but these MUFON guys didn't know that. They didn't do that kind of looking up. I imagine it was harder to do in the 80s, maybe. But he was Bill Believer. He was Mr. X. He was every anonymous name that he used.
That alone,
and that's another one.
That's over.
And
at this point, over at that point.
This man, even if he saw something, let's just like, maybe he saw something once. He's so doubled down that no matter what the fuck is the truth, it doesn't matter anymore because this is full and filled with fantasy. It's all made up. I don't believe a word of half of this shit, especially the parts where like, it was right behind you, dude. You missed it. And like, I got a picture though. So you know it was there, but I got it. You didn't see it because you didn't turn around fast enough.
Bill Believer.
Bill Believer, everybody. slowly but surely, the skeptics began to become the predominant voice within Gulf Breeze. The neighborhood started getting annoyed, as we talked about last episode, with all this shit.
They just realized it was BS. They had better things to do. Dunkin' and nuggets and sauce, things like that.
And so, you know, but this is all he had. And now his life, you know, we fast forward a bit back to the part where his life is falling apart at this point. Now, within the first 2 years, he wasn't doing much. He was just kind of doing interviews like with MUFON and trying to like prove his point.
And his wife was still there at this point.
He even took his wife leaves him in 1992. The book is published in 1990 and the events happen over the course of 1987 to early 1988.
So his family fell apart and he just happened to have more free time now. So he can do more wacky things.
Cause like he does say like, even the, like to his point at the end of these sightings at the, like within the 4 months, they do end, like it never happens again, really. But there's like 20 some odd sightings in that small time.
But people and, still have sightings.
You know, just to put this out there, he did pass a lie detector test, but we cannot rely on those. We are well aware, but this was a lie detector test in the early 1990s. So like more people believed it was real back then. But
and the results of that there, test like, have disappeared. And the man who administered the test is dead.
His name?
Yeah.
John Testman.
He was giving the test, and as Ed almost turned around, he almost saw a UFO, but John Testman took a picture, and here it is. It's very blurry.
It proved him correct.
Now, as we get to the end of his story, where he is kind of being seen as a liar, there are certain things that come up that end up being a problematic for the debunking side, and kind of in a way that, in the same way that UFO people who maybe saw something kind of do themselves dirty by making up shit alongside of it, very similar to the debunking thing. First and foremost, the debunking of the photos has been done many, many times with a couple of weird ones. There were two photos that were taken with the cameras on tripods that do provide a much clearer image of something in the sky that is fucking weird. And these come from like the MUFON photos, but it's unable to be explained what they are. But they are real photos that are taken on stabilized images that are not blurry, that are out there.
Same camera?
But no, their own cameras. They brought their own cameras, better quality cameras. But
there's something out there that
whatever it is, they got a picture of it. Yeah. And it looks like it's definitely a weird photo, but, all his photos, the Polaroid stuff, there's a lot of ways this could have been done. Yes. It's a Polaroid photo and there's no way to immediately like go to Photoshop, fuck with it, digitally mess with it. However, there are still things you can do in the real world that will create illusions with an instant photograph, whether you go out of your way to create like I think you guys brought it up last episode, the Haunted Mansion effect of like the mirrors and all that shit. Yeah. So like that's one way.
Visible without like equipment. Like if you're a person and that's sitting there, that effect, you see it and it looks like an invisible guy. It looks like a half invisible ghost.
And over this investigation with the MUFON as well, he's getting yes-anded by these guys at some point. They are fully in and everything he does is like amazing to them. And he's like, hell yes, they believe me. And now they're taking down every one of these things I'm doing as real. Like that's thank God. But, the photos themselves can be pretty, pretty easily done. And a few of them in particular, not only can be done, but, there were some investigations by some smaller people out there that I stumbled across, Jesse stumbled across that. There's a 7-year-old video on YouTube from somebody who has like a couple thousand views on it at most.
No, dude, it is
less than
433 views.
Even, yeah.
8 subscribers to this guy's YouTube channel.
Jesse, do you want to explain the video? And I'll make sure I send the link along to so we don't forget.
If you want to look it up, it literally is called The Gulf Breeze UFO Sightings by UFO Truth or Lie. That's the YouTube channel. It is a 15-minute video that tells you the story of these photos that we've seen on this show. And in the last, I'm going to say, 3 minutes of the video, he has a photo that is of the MUFON members that came to visit. And it is taken with the same camera that he uses to take these photos of the UFOs. And what this presenter does is he says, I noticed something in this photo, right in the middle of the photo. There's this weird blue line. And so I took the photo and I just bumped the gain on the photo, I guess, and changed it. And what appears is an almost exact replica of the UFOs that appears in all of the photos. And then he lines it up to the point where little dots that are in the photo with the two people are in the photo with the UFO.
Can I have the link to this? YouTube is not.
Jesse, you have it on hand, yeah?
I do, right now. And it's, Alex, you're going to be blown away by this. And
it's very lines good. Up, this is the one I was like, wait till next week, wait till next week.
It lines up perfectly to the point where it is so clear that there's just something wrong with the camera. It's not through glass. There's something in the glass of the camera lenses, some sort of damage or something, or who knows what.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was saying, is like
that is printing it out every single time, because it like is, and it, like go to the end, the last at 1431, that image is startling. It is exact.
Yep. It's fucking dead.
It's and literally one of them is an image of two people maybe 2 feet away, and one is the image of the UFO in the night sky.
Yeah, and it's literally like that's why he's shaking it, is because he knows it's the same every time.
And I wonder if he probably at first, I will give him credit that maybe the first time he thought he saw something, took a photo and he was like, oh my God, it's there. And then later he realized the mistake and was just in. Or he thought, yo, oh my God, I can, oh my God, people are going to lose their minds over this, right? If anything, I would have, I probably would have gone with the dumber haunted camera idea, but like, you know, whatever, whatever floats your boat.
We've seen the haunted cameras too, man. The audio, where they write the messages in the air and shit. Come on.
So this is, but this video was, when I saw this week, I was like, that's it.
It's incontrovertible.
Yeah. Like it is.
Yeah.
Absolutely what
it's
it
very,
is.
Very,
unless,
good.
Unless this video is literally just like lies, it's definitive proof.
Which is why, you know, go look at the evidence yourself. It's all out there, but like do your research. There's a lot. I always, you know, provide sources at the top of the episodes for a reason. Use them.
Try and replicate what he did, you know?
Exactly. Like go ahead and try. But there's other things that are also involved alongside with this that kind of help like that muddy the waters a little bit as well. I don't know if I told you. Did I tell you what Zehas was? Or did I like accidentally skip over that?
I mean, you started talking about Zehas.
So Zehas was apparently the name they had for him.
He's Zehas?
He's Zehas.
So they just like started calling him his name, hoping that was really his name?
Or the name they gave to me.
Like when you see a dog and you're like,
maybe that's his
name. You look like a Sparky. And you just call him Sparky.
Like when a guy becomes like famous amongst like a space tribe and they're like, we will call you Zehas.
Yeah, no,
the Sean Carter.
Yeah.
So obviously the photos are huge. Obviously the just the stories and all the MUFON's barely missing is also huge. However, there are some aspects of the story that like throw doubt in the debunkers aside. And the main thing that I want to talk about is his son went to school with a kid named Tommy, and Tommy's dad was running for city council alongside and against who else but Ed Walters. This is after the abductions, of course. Ed had moved out of his original home where all these had happened, and had moved out completely, and somebody else had moved in. And Tommy came forward and said, hey, I just want you to know, like me as a kid and like his son, we helped make these photos. They were fake. Like this is the kid that his son goes to school with. And the family that moved in ended up finding in the attic a model UFO that looks exactly like the ones in the photos, along with blueprints for how to make it. However, the issue is that these were found and whoever put them up there was a little sloppy with the date and dated the blueprints a year after the sightings had all ended. And the UFO model was like brand new. You can even see pictures of it. And it came out that not only was it a lie, it was planted by Tommy and his family to put dirt on Ed to win the city council election against him. Not that Ed was going to win anyway, but, you know, he didn't win. Ed didn't win. Even when this came out, Ed didn't win. He still fucking lost. But that was like what it was.
There is a bit of model conspiracy there as well. Because when you look at the photos, some photos are super blurry. Then some photos are like the most clear photo you've ever seen.
And those are the ones taken with the tripod cameras.
Right. And that seems like,
clear.
Oh, that could be a model.
It could be that they just knew that they just knew it and made a fake version of the model that they already saw.
Sure.
I don't know why you'd make a blueprint of the model.
A blueprint makes no sense.
Extremely
extra. It's almost like, haha, extra proof.
That's like what Wile E. Coyote would do, not like a real person.
It's very weird. It's very weird. Nonetheless, as his life went on after these encounters, by 1990, he put out a book. And the book itself, he got a deal for, obviously. This is about 2 years after all this was said and done. And how much do you think he got paid for a book deal? 1990, he's getting paid.
$80,000.
What publisher?
Oh, fuck me. Let me go look.
Penguin Press.
Yeah, like Knopf.
Chicken Soup for the Soul. Whoever published... The Far Side.
Avon Books.
Avon, all right.
And you said 80 grand. How much do you think they paid him, Alex?
I'm going to go 8 grand.
You're both wrong. $200,000.
Holy fuck.
Which is about $483,000 in today money.
That's up front?
He got paid for all of it. I don't know if it was up front, but that's how much he got paid total for the
book. It's like 3 boomer houses in like 1987.
Granted, like, so that was his big payday, and his company had fallen apart by that
point.
What
year was this again? 1990?
1990. And then 2 years later, in 1992, him and his wife got divorced. He would go on to write, he'd go to conventions and whatnot, and, you know, the deals probably got less and less as time went on, but this was his life now, and there was no going back. Like, he can't get out of it at this point. The book, the deal for 200 grand, that's a fucking ton of money.
I mean, that's life-changing.
Hey, 200 grand today would change my life.
It's changed. What's life changing in 10 years from now?
Yeah.
Today, life changing. I'm talking about like life changing. Oh,
yeah. 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 You'll be upgraded at that point. You get a car and a house.
And it's after his book comes out that his life kind of fades into UFO obscurity, where because of the planted fucking model, anybody can point now to the debunking and be like, well, they were trying to get him to, they were trying to, you know, frame him for lying. Who's to say any of this other stuff but is not a lie? And then the other side of the aisle being like, we can literally recreate some of these pictures. Some of them are kind of weird. Yeah. But like the overwhelming evidence points toward not real.
Did he get $200,000 advance or did he get?
That's what I was asking.
I don't know. Let me double check.
An advance of 200, like that is a lot for an advance. But that, I mean, I guess if you can,
there was a time when like writers would like be in hotel rooms and order whatever they wanted.
Yeah.
Here we go. Oh, yep. It was. Okay. So contrary to claims by his supporters that he had refused the money for telling a story, he did not. He didn't say he did. His fans were claiming it. The News Journal reported that Walters had been given a $200,000 book advance and offered $450,000 by the American Broadcasting Company for miniseries rights. The paper also reported that Walters had previously served 18 months in prison in 1967 for forgery and auto theft charge. He was granted a pardon by the governor in 1990.
Right. Okay. All right. Okay.
This is...
And that's kind of where, so that's like where the definitive sightings end. And then this is the stage, like right 1990 to 92, Ed enters the world of the UFOs and like is now doing convention appearances, you know, all that stuff. And that's where he goes to for the rest of his life. And that's what brings an end to the Gulf Breeze sightings.
It's the American dream, unfortunately.
Yeah. Did he get a miniseries though? I don't know if he got the miniseries.
I mean, if they paid, here's the thing. People get paid a ton of money all the time for the rights to something
that they doesn't even happen. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of companies that their whole thing is they buy up, like a great example is video games. Trust me, I'm in that space where if you have a video game and it does well, some will offer you money for the rights and they'll just sit on it just so they have it and no one else does. Even if they don't think it's going to be successful or they don't think they're going to make it, just to say, like a lot of games will get bought just to say they have it, because then you can also go portfolio. Like, we want to make something. We have 45 different games that we can make a series about. Like, it happens. And so I believe that ABC would buy it just to say they have it, especially during this time, 90s. That's when they were doing, I mean, Fire in the Sky is the thing we just watched.
I'm just trying to figure out specifically. And according to the journalist who dug this stuff up, he had received the 200 grand, but it was only offered the 450, but they didn't either go through. I don't know why. Maybe they pulled back the offer or maybe like he didn't take it, but it doesn't look like he got the 450,000. He only got the 200 grand, which still is a lot of money. That's still a lot of money.
Someone offered him $450,000. Like,
yeah,
the grift is real on this.
Yeah. That's the issues. It's like, that's the problem. It's like, you can see the grift now. And that's unfortunately where it sits. And whether he did see one thing once or something, it doesn't matter, because so much of what he says in his book is such a fucking lie. And when the Zayhas and In Sleep You Know and all that shit started coming around, that's where you're like, okay, brother.
And he got $500,000 in today money.
Like, imagine if he just stuck with the first few sightings and then MUFON came over, but they didn't see anything. He didn't like try to make money. I know, but like Travis Walton disappeared for 5 days. He didn't try to make up anything else after that. He got a movie for it anyway.
There's a level to that, that even if you don't believe it, there's the potential. Travis Walton one is still very convincing because no one is acting like, yo, I keep seeing him.
No. Yeah.
It's like
people actively like, don't talk to me about it.
I don't want to talk about it. It was weird and it messed up all my friends. And even if they all made it up, their acting seems real, and that's why people believe it, compared to this guy who, from moment one, when you're like, he saw it like 50 times, like, bullshit, did not happen, not even remotely.
Yeah, I agree. But gentlemen, that is it. That is it for the Gulf Breeze sighting two-parter. I hope you enjoyed our journey here.
Glorious. If you want to go watch that YouTube video. Like, it's just some dude's like pet project from 7 years ago,
and he really well done.
Nails it.
It's really well done.
I can't believe, like, what was the theory you wanted to say, Alex, about the internet videos that we both found them independently? You said, if I can remember.
And he did. It's on you now, Alex.
Oh, about what?
Wait. Because me and Jesse found the same video separately online. You said you had a theory about internet.
Yeah. The best YouTube videos have less than 1,000 views, are pure, are unmotivated by SEO. They're just earnest tries, and maybe a few people watch them, but the best ones are the ones where there's 400 videos and they're really consistent and they're all there and it's to an audience of 700. That's going to be the best YouTube channel. It's the real YouTube. It's like the unmoneyed YouTube, like before we
YouTube.
Yeah, before we came in and ruined it with our little class of jokers. Like,
hey, YouTube created the algorithm that we had to play by.
Oh, yeah, trust me, I'm aware.
Yeah, but we didn't have to play by it. We just did that because we wanted to be successful. These people are doing it the old school way, making whatever they want, and they got sub 1,000, but they're like getting some views. That's the ones. That's the YouTube channels.
This video is like chef's kiss. It's everything I like. The minute I got it, like saw it a couple weeks ago, I was like, I don't believe a word this kid says.
The word thorough comes to mind.
Thorough. Like, yeah, it's great. It's great. There's a lot of, I mean, this Gulf Breeze is one of the most investigated UFO sightings out there. So there's so much shit you can go out there and read.
He's got eight
I went
subs.
Through so many newspaper clippings, interviews. There's so infinite shit out there. Go check it out and go check out us at patreon.com/IlluminatiPod where we're off to go do a minisode for all of you. So thank you so much for listening. Website. Next time we record, Alex will be a married man. So congratulations, Alex.
Thank you. You're welcome. It's been a long road.
The fact that they're listening to this might be the day you're getting married right now.
I can't wait to be married, to be honest.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much. We appreciate you. We love you. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Illuminati Podcast. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Mike Martin, joined by the... I don't know who they are. There's two.
What?
Terrence Hill and Bud Spencer.
No.
Neo and Trinity.
No.
I don't understand, and I probably never will. Let me just tell you right now that there's two. Leon Kennedy and Claire Redfield.
I'm telling you, I think he literally just looked up famous duos.
Cheech and Chong.
And has just been going through the list ever since.
I'm trying to dig deep. Which one of you is Dick Powell?
Me?
Your name's Jesse Cox!
I want to Illuminati. I want my mind. I want to Illuminati. I want my mind.
Everybody, welcome back to the Illuminati Podcast. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Mike Martin, joined by Alex and Jesse. Like a shooting star across the sky that's actually a UFO.